You're listening to the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. A couple weeks ago, we were in Portland, Oregon for our Feast Portland Food Festival and took the opportunity to record a couple of podcasts at Ava Jean's restaurant. First up, we got Carla Lolly Music and Emil Stonick from Bon Appetit talking to Jason Phillips of Fine and Dandies about marijuana edibles. Not that we're advocating the use of illegal marijuana, but in Portland, it's legal. And they have these really kind of cool, slick dispensaries that are like these chic little shops with cool branding and whatnot. And then Andrew Knowlton and I talked to Aaron Franklin from Franklin Barbecue in Austin, Texas, arguably the best barbecue in America, which of course means the best barbecue in the world. Right now, let's listen to Carla and Emil talk with Jason Phillips of Fine and Dandies.
All right, it's a beautiful morning in Portland, Oregon. The sun is out, the sky is blue, which is, you know, enjoy these days, right?
Definitely.
So one of the things that is amazing about Oregon right now and is different from the last time I was here is that the recreational marijuana industry has really, like, taken off in the past 1 to 2 years. A lot has changed. And Jason, I was hoping you could just give us an overview, because, like, we happen to be in a state where this is the law, and that's exciting, but it's different state by state. So mm-hmm. Will you just sort of break down what people will find when they walk into a dispensary these days in Oregon?
People will find a variety of single-dosed packages that you can buy that are up to 15 milligrams, one per day per person. And there are a multitude of them.
And that's anyone. You don't need to have a medical license. It's really anybody can just walk in.
It's anybody over 21.
21 and over. So a little bit like going into a bar and ordering a drink.
Exactly.
But you can get one drink at one bar per day.
Yes, yes.
All right. Yeah, well, Emil and I had an opportunity yesterday to walk around and sort of see some of the newness that's going on. Stopped into a couple dispensaries. We were at Pharma and we were at Sarah, which are both, like, really beautiful and had amazing customer service.
That to me was the thing that was really, really striking, was, like, walking in and having somebody just kind of walk you through all of the products. Like, you had just had kind of like a dedicated person who was talking you through, like, the different edibles, the different, like, actual, like, cannabis flower offerings. It was just, like, very, it's like I feel like it was nicer than most wine stores that I go in.
You know,
like, really knowledgeable.
The way that they were speaking about the effects and the flavors too was very, it really reminded me a lot of the way a sommelier would describe wine or someone in a wine store. And also the array from, you know, there's chocolates and there's candies. There was a Marionberry candy there that was like a real Oregon, you know, sort of nod to where we are.
Very Portlandia.
Very Portlandia in, like, a great way. So with the products that you guys create, it's beautiful chocolates and tarts. And how for us, it's really interesting how much this connects back to the food scene in general, and is less about, you know, cannabis scene as it is about, you know, just making things taste delicious. So can you talk a little about how your products reflect the place that we're in?
Well, we try to get everything as local as possible. We've got a tartlet. One of our recreational products is it's got toffee hazelnuts on top of it that we all do by hand. All of our ingredients are made by hand, i.e. the cookie that's on the tartlet is. I mean, we're making that all ourselves. We're rolling it out, cutting it, everything.
And hazelnuts are very Oregon product.
Trey Oregon.
Yeah.
Very much.
You came into it also from a culinary background.
Absolutely.
So how does that, what was the inspiration for you?
To start an edibles company or just to get into food in general? Or
really transitioning from one type of food to another?
Opportunity. I saw a lot of opportunity. I went to school at OSU for food science. And when I got out of school, I walked into a dispensary and I saw these things, and I'd been a baker and a pastry guy for 20 plus years. So I saw them and I was like, wow, I could do a lot better than that. Mm. And honestly, that's kind of where I started off.
What are the challenges for making a dessert taste delicious that has cannabis in it?
The medicine that you put into it, if you're, you know, what medium it's in, is it kief? Is it, you know, just ground up flour? Is it BHO? Is it CO2 extract? Yada, 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 on down the line. Some of the processes take out more of the aromatic components out of the medicine, so to speak, through the cooking effectively. Mm-hmm. It evaporates all of the terpenes, that's what they're called. And
that's where the flavor comes from?
That's where a lot of the flavor comes mm-hmm. from. So if you find something that has been really, really, really processed, that's you're going to get less of a cannabis flavor out of that into it. Plus, you also, you know, working with chocolate and working with very large flavors is one of the things that we try to focus on, as well as pairing with spices and things like that to kind of make it even less intrusive.
Right.
Well, yeah, that was something that I was wondering. It's like, at what point are you trying to kind of play with and play up and play to those, like the actual flavors that are in the cannabis, and versus kind of masking hiding or trying to minimize? Because I feel like there's opportunity there, but when you think about kind of your dorm room Duncan Hines dump and stir, like weed brownies,
it didn't taste very good.
No. It's mm-hmm. very much like you're trying to like chew, swallow, and
you just get it down as quickly as possible. You know, that's one of the benefits of using chocolate. That's why chocolate is such a huge thing. That and the fat aspect of it, but the brownie, it covers up a lot of that flavor, and oftentimes the way that you would do the infusion of the medicine into the butter is a long contact. Mm. So therefore you're getting a higher
extraction,
exactly. Yeah. It's like coffee or whatever, longer it's in contact, the more of an extraction it's gonna get.
So on the extraction front, there are a lot of different ways to get the active components out of the flour and into the food product. So mm-hmm. you mentioned butter. Is that primarily what you guys use? No,
not at all.
Is it proprietary? Can you say?
No, we use BHO, which is a butane hash oil. And that is one of those that has been processed so much because there is a heat element to it, or a heat step to it, and that will evaporate. That not only evaporates all the residual solvents, but it also evaporates the terpenes and it, you know, decarboxylizes.
So it gives you a pretty neutral flavor for making.
As neutral as you can get.
Right. But it's not going to taste like it smells, maybe.
No. Well, the benefit of that is that it's such a high concentration. Usually they're anywhere from, you know, 60% to 80%, whatever, depending. So the higher concentration you get, the more milligrams are in that, so the less you have to put in, yada, yada. So, I mean, that really is, I think, a lot of the difference. That and the chlorophyll that is transferred when you're soaking it in butter or when you're cooking it in butter and doing it that way.
Right.
That has a distinct flavor as well. Plus, you're not really killing all of those terpenes that are in there.
Gotcha.
When you were coming into this, you it seems like you kind of saw a hole in the marketplace. I know Portland is like, you know, kind of famously obsessed with the artisanal and the local in food. And so, I mean, were you kind of like betting that people
absolutely.
Were going to be?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was my goal I come from that kind of school of thought. You know, the restaurants that I worked at prior have all been, you know, a lot of farm table stuff. So I came with that. I'm from Portland as well. So, I mean, it really, it just resonates with me. So I'm,
I think part of the advantage of this being a state-by-state movement with state-by-state kind of regulations at this point means that within each market, like the purveyors and the creators of these products are have to stay local. Like right now, a product that you make in Oregon stays in Oregon. So and the way that they reflect the place that they're in, I think is sort of creating this, you know, small business opportunity. And, you know, do you see it the same way?
Yeah, I definitely see that as an opportunity. I mean, a lot of people aren't taking it as an opportunity, but, you know, I mean, I definitely do.
Yeah. And do you worry about big business sort of realizing the opportunity that is here?
Completely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, we've noticed a lot of, yesterday, one of the shops that we were in had the Marley Natural, which I think is one of the bigger sort of celebrity branded marijuana products out there. But, you know, it's like Snoop's got a product and Whoopi Goldberg's got a product. And, you know, it's just a matter of time, it seems like. Do you worry about competing on that scale?
No.
No.
I don't care. They're going to come anyway. You know, I mean, it's really that they're coming, you know it. So the plan is, you know, build up your business well enough so that when they do come in, you're the one that they pick and done.
Right.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of seems like the cool thing about this particular moment right now is that, you know, they know that if they're getting something that is mass produced, they're getting a fundamentally different product, and maybe it's cheaper or maybe quote unquote consistent, but they also can pay a premium for a higher quality product that is, you know, handmade and, you know, the kind of thing that you're offering.
How much has branding come into the way that you package your product and how you choose what food products to make? Like, you guys are much more on the sweet end of things. I've noticed a lot more savory products out there too. The folks from Canivore dropped by yesterday and had some smoked salmon that had been infused with the oil, which I thought was, as far as like an Oregon product, to have like a, that was amazing. Do you see yourself moving over to savory, or like what do you want to do?
We definitely have had our ideas. We've got a million ideas and they keep coming, and it's just one of those things. So yeah, I mean, it's we're keeping that door open. I'm not saying that that's exactly where we're going, but we are definitely keeping that door open because it's, you know, as people get used to it, you know, one of the things that I've seen is the candy and the sweet is the most accessible and it's the most approachable because people are used to that via the brownies or, or whatever, the hard candies. So the savory isn't really taken off yet, but I foresee that it will, you know, once people get used to this, because not everybody likes a, you know, you don't want to eat a candy bar. Or
yeah, you got to think about your waistlines.
Of course.
It's not all fun and games.
You know, I mean, you're talking about kind of having all of these ideas and being able to, you know, and testing them and seeing what's up. But with this, is there more of a process? If you're like, oh, we want to experiment with a shortbread cookie, does it then have to go through some kind of regulatory But like, how long is it from like you having the idea, baking the product, to it being in the store?
If we have the packaging, it goes. There's a lot of testing involved. That's really the pause in the system is waiting on the testing to come back. But beyond that, it's pretty much right now, it's the Wild West still up until October 1st, when a lot of the legislation starts to kick in, a lot of the rules start to kick in on the packaging, on the labeling and whatnot. So right now, as long as you've got everything, all your T's crossed and your I's dotted, then you can actually put out whatever now.
So it's a little bit like having a calorie count on the nutritional information label, or your wine alcohol by volume percentage on the bottle. These are things that consumers can just check the label, kind of know what they're getting. No, and I think part of that customer service part, where there's someone, if this is your first time having it, is kind of giving you a recommendation on how much to enjoy. But I guess you don't want to make it too delicious, right? Because like you can't have seconds on some of these things.
It depends on who you are. It really just depends.
I'm curious to know, what are some of the things that you're selling right now? And
we have tartlets, which are a s'more. We've got a s'more and a hazelnut right now. The hazelnut has a shortbread. It's got a layer of caramel. It's got milk chocolate. And then it's got the toffee hazelnuts. Mm. And the s'more is a graham cracker, milk chocolate, marshmallows. Those are very popular. Those are all recreationally dosed at 15 milligrams. We have an instant chai and an instant cocoa that we've come up with that is recreationally dosed as well. We have just come out with a chocolate dipped shortbread and a chocolate chip dipped graham cracker, all of which, of course, the shortbread and the graham cracker are made by us, and so they're pretty magnificent as far as flavor goes. Our chocolate bars, all of our toppings and everything. So if you got the strawberry sundae bar, has a pizzelle that we make, and you know, all we try to make all of the toppings that go onto it. So if there's a cookie on there, or if there is a candied orange zest or candied bacon, we make all of that. We've got a hound dog, which is based on Elvis's favorite sandwich, which is a peanut butter chip, banana chip, and candied bacon.
Ooh, I bet Elvis would have liked that, actually.
Yeah, that
from what I know
good.
About him, he'd probably be pretty open.
Yeah, see, I just really want, I want you guys to sell them in like a pack of 10, but only one of them actually has cannabis in it, so that you could then just, you know, you could eat the one
but
that
it
you
wouldn't
knew
be...
was active, and then you could just snack after that.
But it would be clear which one was which, right? Otherwise, we have to eat the whole package to find out.
I kind of like that.
It's kind of a surprise.
A Russian roulette model.
Oh, interesting.
It's kind of like, what is it, Cracker Jack? You know, you get a surprise, a treat, you know, you just don't know what it is.
Right. You only get just one. And have you thought about, do you think there will be a day when... you know, like going into Salt and Straw or Stumptown or any other of, you know, these sort of locally recognized brands, that you'll have a Fine and Dandy's candy shop that is all yours?
Hopefully someday.
That's pretty amazing to think.
That would be really cool.
Really cool. It's like having your own vineyard where you sell wine there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It would be great. Yeah, it's going to be way down the road, I think, because I don't think we're there. I think that there are a lot of companies that are doing this. Because there is so little regulation at this very moment, you can start pumping out and see what hits, you know, and it's kind of like a market research period at this point.
Very cool.
So
this is fascinating. Thank you guys so much for coming.
Thank you for having us.
Emil, my comrade.
Thank you, Carla.
All right. That was Carla Lally Music and Emil Stonick talking to Jason Phillips from Fine and Dandy's. Now, Andrew Knowlton and me talking to Aaron Franklin of the world-famous Franklin Barbecue.
Aaron, I love that we all have to get on a plane to Portland, Oregon to get you on the podcast.
It's because you guys don't come to Texas.
We do come to Texas. Okay, you do once or twice a year.
It's true.
Yes. We would have come to Texas just to do the podcast as an excuse.
Well, you should have.
Which is basically you always go to Texas, and we go to South by Southwest the last several years in March, which is basically just an excuse to eat and go to Franklin Barbecue.
Yeah. But that week is so hard to do anything. Oh my gosh. It's an impossible week to get around.
We'll talk about this. So South by Southwest, which in the last few years they've introduced a food component. Originally it was music way back in the day, then like the tech sort of thing and film. And what's that like on your side as a business owner?
From my perspective, well, early on when we opened up the barbecue trailer and then the building, March was always kind of, you know, like every year I would build a barbecue pit, and like, oh, we got to get ready for March. And that was always kind of the jump. So all year we worked for March. And now that
was like the Evel Knievel ramp.
Yeah, totally. And now it's just the same thing all the time. And it really.
Because it's just crazy busy all the time.
Because it's just bonkers all the time.
Does Franklin Barbecue have a downtime?
There's about a week or two after school starts at the beginning of September, so right about now, it kind of gets a little weird.
So the line goes from like 4 hours to just an hour or something?
Pretty much.
Okay. So that's when you should go to Franklin Barbecue is the first couple weeks in September.
Absolutely.
So book your trip for next year, kids.
Yeah, do it now.
No, when was the first time you went to Franklin? Because you, years ago, wrote it up as, talk about the restaurant, article and stuff.
And I actually remember the first time you came in.
Right. It was actually...
I was like, oh my God, what's that guy doing here?
It's a weird connection because I was coming into town for the Austin Wine and Food Festival, the first year that ever happened.
Yeah, it was the Live Fire event.
And the connection with this...
2011.
2011, was it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was the first year we started.
You opened in 2000...
December of 2009.
2009.
And then we moved into the building a year later.
Right. So the first time I went to Franklin Barbecue was when Aaron had the food truck.
Yeah.
Which I was down there and a friend took me there.
Oh, okay.
But the funny connection with Portland Feast, where we are right now, and Franklin was Mike Thielen, who's one of the co-founders of Feast Portland, told me, you know, Aaron opened the brick and mortar. Let's go. There's somebody waiting in line for us. Because even back then, there was probably a 30, 40, maybe an hour.
Probably about an hour and a half, I bet.
And I went in, and John Besh from New Orleans
was there.
And that was the first time I'd had the brick and mortar stuff. But what I found fascinating was Aaron's story also, and the fact that here was a guy whose family had dabbled in barbecue a little bit.
They were dabblers?
Yeah, they were dabblers. Your uncle or your dad?
My mom and dad actually ran a place for a few years when I was probably 9 or 10 years old.
What do you mean by ran a place?
So they had bought an existing barbecue joint down in Bryan, which is where I grew up. And I think it took them about 2 years to realize that
this is not the life.
This is a terrible way to live. I didn't pick up on that. I just thought it was cool.
but then him basically starting like smoking in the backyard just with friends, like you and I would, Adam.
And what were you smoking at that point? What sort of contraption?
Oh, I had bought about $100 just a little offset cooker at the local hardware store.
A little pellet guy or
No.
Just charcoal. Just charcoal, right?
Yeah, just or like wood.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we have down in Texas.
And I guess my biggest question, you've had this amazing success. I see you with Nobu on American Express.
Nobu
didn't. President Obama eating there. Is when you were in your backyard or even when you opened your food truck, did you ever in your wildest imagination see yourself as like becoming literally a barbecue god?
Well, I am.
Yes,
you
I
know,
saw
of
it.
Of course, I didn't really think of it like that, but right. I certainly thought of it. You know, of course, you're sitting in a backyard drinking beers by yourself for countless hours staring at a fire.
Right.
You're like, oh, that would be really neat to have a barbecue joint one day. Oh, that would be so cool to do this or do that. It really just kind of like had this huge pipe dream going on for, I mean, it was probably took like 10 years before we even opened up the trailer.
That's like me on the putting green, like, oh, and for the Masters
it's
Championship.
Oh, darn.
It's like, this could happen.
So I kind of like, you know, night after night would just like lay in bed and kind of visualize like how I wanted to, you know, open a place, how I wanted it to be, you know, like thinking about the food and like building barbecue pits and all this stuff.
Right.
So I mapped out that aspect of it, but I never even once considered like on a personal level, like what the side effect of all that would be.
Right.
So I'm still wondering.
But was there a point where you had can you eat brisket anymore?
No.
You can't touch it.
I do sometimes, but it's, you know, in the mornings at the restaurant, I'll have a bite of this, a bite of that, and I'm like, yeah, that's a little bit of this. I think, you know, blah, blah, blah. I critique. I'm really good at troubleshooting.
Was there a point where you had it, though, back in the day, where you're like, you know what? This is pretty good. Like, I'm pretty good at smoking a brisket.
Yeah. There were definitely some times in the backyard.
Really?
Or like, probably 2 years before we opened up the trailer, and I didn't really know exactly what I'd done wrong. I thought I'd really messed it up. It turns out I just overcooked it, and turns out that's the key to brisket. Like, I just randomly stumbled across, you know, cooking something for 14 hours.
When people undercook brisket, it drives me nuts. I'm like, why don't you just leave it in for two more hours? It's just, I'm like sawing through it. I'm like, oh.
Patience.
Yeah.
Just be patient with this stuff.
Just do nothing.
Just
be lazy.
There. Just keep sitting there.
Drinking.
But yeah, there were some times in the backyard, like, wow, that is, wow. That's pretty cool.
Can I ask if we can get into the more nerdy level of barbecue?
Sure,
because
let's do it.
Obviously, a lot of barbecue in Texas, Austin, everywhere, and the famous places, the Kreutzes of the world and whatnot. I don't quite understand the differentiations between a good brisket and great brisket. If it seems like you get the big piece of meat, and we're not talking about, you know, boutique-y, grass-fed meat from a particular and then you put a bunch of salt and a lot of pepper on it, and you put it in a smoker for 14 hours, and like, doesn't it all come out the same no matter where you go?
Oh, gosh.
Seriously, I'm like, it's not like you're doing something, restaurants and other chefs, like, they're like creating special sauces and flavor combinations and plating in a different way. Isn't brisket brisket?
Well, so not all brisket's just brisket. I mean, of course, the feed has a lot to do with it. The breed has a lot to do with it. The wood has a tremendous amount to do with it. But the airflow of the cooker has a lot to do with it. It's like a million different variables just kind of floating around out there. And you kind of have to think of a brisket as kind of like an ongoing timeline. Like you've got this fire going. You've got fat that's got to break down. You've got collagens that need to break down. You've got all these things that have to go on. But they all have to meet up at the same spot by the end of the cook. So then you kind of think of that and it's like, okay, well, then I've got smoke. Well, that's a really strong flavor usually. Well, how do you get a more delicate? This is how I look at it, at least. How do you get a more delicate flavor out of that? Well, obviously, it's a higher combustion temperature. That's when you get like the vanillas and like all these like, you know, more like kind of clean flavors out of oak specifically, which is what we use, post oak. But then you think about all that smoke and something's going to cook for that long. You're probably not going to taste a tablespoon of like cumin.
Right.
Yeah. Like, it, you're never...
But also, I imagine you don't want too much smoke, right?
Well, you don't want too much smoke, and that's where that higher combustion temperature comes in, because that's kind of... Well, we don't have enough time for this conversation, but, you know, that's where you get kind of cleaner flavors. So if you think about it like that, and then, of course, we're not going to put sauce on it, because, well, geez, man, we're in Texas. No.
Yeah, Texas. You know? Apparently, get a rope. Ladies and gentlemen, you do not sauce your meat.
Not
maybe, not well, at least certainly not beforehand, ever.
No.
But you do...
You could dip. You could dip. Dipping's okay.
Are you good at, when going to another place, tasting a brisket, especially like in New York now, there's a lot of barbecue places like Brisket Town and Hometown.
Hometown does a good job.
I still haven't eaten there.
When you taste brisket at other sort of reputable places, can you sort of tell what they've done or how they cook it? Can you sort of guess?
Oh, absolutely.
You can.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's what I've gotten really good at, actually. Just tasting something and be like, oh, yeah. Blah,
blah. Who else does brisket really well these days, either in Texas or elsewhere, in your mind? Is there anyone?
Well, I don't really eat a lot of barbecue.
Oh, that's true.
I don't really go out and like try stuff because it doesn't, I guess it doesn't mean the same thing as it used to.
You ruined yourself. I mean, it's almost like your curse is you can't eat barbecue anymore.
So I have a number of friends who have a Big Green Egg, which is becoming more and more popular. It's the giant ceramic egg that you can long cook for at home, and you can get a pretty good consistent temperature in those, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And very pricey.
Most of the brisket I've had from friends who have made the brisket and are very proud of the brisket.
Who shall remain nameless.
And I don't think they listen to the Foodcast. It's dry. Yours is ridiculously succulent and fatty.
Okay.
Just so, like I feel like guilty eating yours. Theirs, I'm like, eh.
Okay, let's dig a little deeper. When you say dry, do you mean dry and flaky and crumbly, or do you mean chalky and tacky? Like, what's its mouth feel?
I mean, it's that kind of...
Does it have like kind
it's
of...
It's that
like
kind of denseness of grain. There's not any sort of fatty succulence to it. And maybe if there's fat on top, it's not like infusing the meat. It's like segregated, you know what I mean? But the meat itself is kind of a one note, just there's a tense...
Just chewy tenseness. And cardboardy?
Yeah.
It's probably not cooked all the way. It's probably not tender.
Is it in,
and what about, it probably didn't cook long enough.
And what about temperature?
They probably cooked at too low of a temperature and didn't
too
really
low of a temperature.
Too low of a temperature and ran out of fat before the collagen broke down. There's that little timeline thing going on.
So if I'm standing in line,
apparently it is more complicated.
And maybe they were fat side up and not fat side down. It might have dried out the bottom.
That's like a lesson in life. Yeah. Fat side up, man.
Trial and error.
So if you're at Franklin Barbecue and you're waiting in line and then you go up, what's the order when you order the brisket? Is it to get the deckle in, the fat end, or?
You can just say, we have a real specific order that I cut things.
Okay.
And if, you know, I mean, obviously we started off in a trailer and it was me and my wife.
Right.
Like everything in that restaurant, like I am the center of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like every position started from the way that I wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not like we like sat around like, well, how are we going to do this? Like it just all happened supernatural with the way I did it. So, and the way I do it, is you can order whatever you want, and if something looks good, or if maybe something's not looking real good, and somebody comes in like, oh, I want 4 pounds of lean brisket from the inside. Like, ooh, are you sure? Why don't I throw this other stuff in there? What do you think about that? Oh, that looks great. Well, that's actually the fatty. Oh, really?
Right.
Like, well, yeah, we'll think of it more like a ribeye versus like a sirloin. You know, and then you kind of just like maybe try to talk people into what you think you want them to eat because it looks good. You know, because you want people to get the best thing possible.
And that
know?
Is the fatty end.
And that's, well, it depends. See, I kind of prefer lean myself.
Really?
Okay, wait, before we get it, can you break down, so to talk about the actual cut of brisket and how there are sort of two sort of ends and how they fit together?
Yeah.
So, like, explain a brisket in general.
Well,
where it comes from and all
so
that.
So, for those that
comes from a cow.
It comes from a cow. It's beef.
Yeah. Well, that is not so obvious to everyone, necessarily.
No. Yeah. People ask that all the time. Yeah. Especially, like, in the early days when we first, be like, brisket, is that pork?
Your whole hog is really good.
Oh, it's delicious. Yeah, no, it's definitely beef. You can get a brisket from other animals too, but in Texas we're cooking beef. It's two pectoral muscles, and if you look at a cow, over a podcast you can't see this, but I'm actually holding my arm out. It's kind of right here, and then that's
you're grabbing your chest muscle above your heart.
Yep, and so that's the lean part, and then the fatty part is up here in the shoulder.
Oh.
And that seam that you guys see at the top of a brisket is actually kind of the armpit of the cow.
Oh, okay.
Where it comes together.
Where it kind of comes together. And the lean side of a brisket, there are two muscles. One's a little fattier. It's got more marbling. And then the other one's more lean, and that's kind of like between the skin and the rib cage.
But when you're typically, if you're buying brisket like at a market for the home cook, does the butcher or the meat counter, do they typically separate those two cuts, or do they keep them together? Because how big is a full brisket?
A full brisket could be anywhere between, I've seen them as small as 4 pounds, mm-hmm. but that's because we don't use growth hormones in ours, and sometimes they get really small.
Mm.
But probably between like 12 to 20 pounds, I would say. But you got to think of it like, just because it starts off as 20 pounds, that doesn't mean you're going to actually
cook down
up with 20 pounds. You'll probably end up with 7 or 8 pounds once it's cooked.
But if you're going to a butcher and you want, say you want only part of the brick, you don't want 14 pounds.
Well, you don't ever want to break one up, because they don't really, one doesn't really cook right without the other.
Oh,
that's kind of how it works.
Because the lean side needs a fatty side.
Yeah, exactly. So you really do want to, you know, get a whole brisket, and it's called a packer cut. But, you know, back in the day, you go to a grocery store and they would just, you know, it looked like a London broil. I mean, it's like the flat with all the fat cut off of it.
Right.
That's not even worth your time. That's terrible.
Wouldn't it inherently cook unevenly if you've got the fat side where the muscles are kind of woven with all the fat and collagen, and then the lean side? And so how do you cook them together?
Well, that's the tricky part about cooking a brisket.
So it's harder than you're making it sound. You're like, you just said anyone can do it. I don't know.
Anybody can build a fire.
No, but it's like asking, Dostoevsky or Picasso, like, is he easy to write and paint? Like, yeah, it's kind of easy.
Yeah, okay, good point. I can't paint.
No, but it's like roasting a chicken. The breast is always going to be done before the legs and stuff you want, and or a duck or whatever. It's like, that's
well, and that's where you get creative with how you're cooking. You know, you put maybe the fatty part. You know, some people kind of think about like the fatty part of a brisket, like the fat insulates the meat from the heat, but fat conducts heat quicker than protein. So then you might get creative with the kind of cooking that you've got. As the heat coming from the bottom, you may actually want that fat. You may turn the brisket upside down, which is actually technically right side up if it's, you know, anywho.
Yeah.
But, you know, so, I mean, I think you need to get a little creative. And both muscles do not cook at the same rate.
Can you talk about, we were in Austin last March, and you brought us to the back of your shop where you actually have the smokers. And I was just like, wow, these look like giant black metal submarines, like 30 feet long, in this weird screen porch room just filled with smoke.
120 degrees.
And that was in March. So I don't, like, how does one, like, how do you, that's someone's job to be back there all day?
Unfortunately, yeah.
In the smoke and heat in this weird screen room?
It's really hot. It's not very smoky, though.
How big are the smokers? I thought it was pretty smoky. That's because you're used to it. How many smokers do you have, and how big are they?
So there's 5 cookers.
You call them cookers?
Cookers.
Okay.
They're made out of 1,000-gallon propane tanks. And the cook chamber on a 1,000-gallon propane tank, depending on manufacturer, is roughly 16 feet by 42.5-inch diameter. So each one of those will fit 24 briskets. And we've got 4 of those. And then the fifth one, we actually had to cut about 20... probably about, well, maybe about 30 inches out of it, I guess, to clear the doorway when we moved in to the smokehouse. So that one's called Shorty now. It used to be Red Horn Chocolate.
And these cookers, you designed yourself?
We built everything.
You built everything?
Yeah, some of them I built in my backyard.
But from existing propane tanks?
Yeah, I would just drive up to like Oklahoma and pick up a 1,000-gallon propane tank that I found on Craigslist, give a guy $300, turn around, drive straight back, start cutting it.
Wow.
And so we've got 5 of those propane cookers. We've got 1 giant rotisserie that is what we do ribs on, because kind of, you know, now that we've reached maximum capacity at the restaurant, now I'm starting to like split, like ribs go on one cooker, brisket goes on one cooker, sausage goes in another cooker. And so we've got those 5 cookers just for brisket. But in the mornings, you know, turkeys will go on one cooker, beef ribs will go on another cooker on a Saturday. And then
when did you start to diversify with all these different cuts and meats?
Probably when we moved into the building, because when we moved into the building, everything was in a back. It was in a like a trailer out in the backyard. So, and we cooked 24 hours a day then, and we still do. But I couldn't cook enough ribs.
Yeah.
So we added turkey to try to offset that.
Right. Because I remember the original menu was turkey, and then you had the sausage.
Well, we didn't have turkey.
You didn't.
No. That came after we moved into the building.
Is it whole turkey or
turkey breast?
Turkey breast.
Yep. And now we do about 20 to 30 of those a day.
So which is what is the typical order? Do people want a mix, or do they just want the brisket because that's what they've read about? Or do you try to coax them into trying a little of everything?
Well, when I cut lunch every day, You know, I could kind of guide it. Like if we needed to sell more turkey, you know, you throw a couple free pieces on and you're like, oh man, what's that? Ooh, that looks good. Yeah. And then before you know it, everybody's ordering turkey or, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, it's like, oh, well, that looks really good. Or if something does look good, then you're like, man, this looks really great. You should have a couple slices of this too.
From what Andrew told me, you're here by yourself in Portland?
I've got one person with me. He's not a cook and he doesn't slice meat at lunch.
Does he just hang out with you? Is
he's the manager of the restaurant. It's my, yeah, pretty much. He's my best friend, Benji, from high school. We've been hanging out since we were like 14.
Benji's been working for you forever.
Yeah, well, he worked for NPR in New York for a brief period. Oh, okay. And then he moved back and started managing the restaurant. Okay. But he helped us build the trailer. I mean, yeah, he's been around for a real long time.
But you're doing a big brisket feast tomorrow?
Yep.
And you're doing everything yourself?
Benji's an extra set of hands, moral support, and crowd control.
So what are you making tomorrow, and what's the process, for instance, when you're on the road like this? How do you do it? How do you take Franklin Barbecue on the road?
Well, it's tricky, and I don't travel, by the way. Like, I do two off-site cooks a year. Well, I do stuff in Texas because I can drive a cooker over there, but yeah. I do a pop-up in Chicago every July 4th weekend. It's just simply called Aaron's Barbecue. and I do Feast. I've done Feast 5 years in a row. Last year, we built a cooker. A friend of mine that has a barbecue joint here in town drove down. It's his cooker. We built it for him, but I get to use it once a year. So I have a barbecue pit up here. I've got firewood up here, you know, from my friend's barbecue joint, Podno's over at Killingsworth. And, you know, everything else, we bring everything else.
So how many briskets are you doing for tomorrow?
Cooking 18 briskets, 18 racks of pork ribs, 6 pork butts, and I froze and brought sausage with us.
But how big is this smoker?
So it's two cook chambers on one trailer, so it's two separate cookers. Mm-hmm. It's probably about 20 feet long, I guess.
And so what time will you get all that started, this afternoon or evening?
I'm going to start trimming meat at 4 o'clock this afternoon, and I'm buying myself enough time to, like, not rush. Like, I'm normally, like, super rushed when it comes to these things, so we're just kind of, you know, we've got a place that we're cooking and everything, so it should be pretty convenient. Looks great. Cooker's out there. Got to stack up some wood and split some wood and stuff here this afternoon. But yeah, we'll start prepping about 4 this afternoon. I look to have my briskets on at 8:30 tonight, 8:30 or 9. And then all night the ribs will go on. I guess the pork butts will go on at 11:30. The pork ribs are going to go on at 5:30 a.m. And yeah.
That's when much when it. Does the brisket come off?
Hopefully it'll come off around 1 p.m.
When do you go to sleep?
I won't.
No, you mean literally?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to sleep till tomorrow night.
This is.
I don't understand that.
This is old school Aaron Franklin, because when I met him, he would have a lawn chair, and you would. How many espressos would you drink over the night while you were smoking brisket?
Oh, geez.
Like 20?
Like
something?
seven or eight, probably.
And you would do the.
But they were small ones. I was doing a hand lever Pavone machine then. Now we've got a much better machine.
But he would do the crossword puzzle and many of them. What do you do now?
I run like hell and just work. Okay. I don't really cook a lot of those overnight shifts anymore. Thank goodness.
Right.
That's no way to live.
Right.
We have a little girl, so I'm trying. Like, I kind of like.
You have a little girl who does it for you?
Yeah, she does it for me.
Get them started.
She's really good. She's 2.5 years old, but man, she is really good.
You can get away with anything in Texas.
Oh, totally.
You've had amazing success with this one store in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
How do you resist, especially with barbecue, expanding? And I'm sure you get asked all the time from Vegas to New York, come open a restaurant. Is that ever going to happen? Or when do you, you know, how do you resist saying yes?
I resist saying yes by simply reminding myself that I don't want to. We work way too hard at this one place to keep it like almost as good as it can be. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's not ever perfect because it could always be better.
Right.
But man, if we did another one, oh my God, it would be horrible.
So you're saying you will never open another Aaron Franklin barbecue
until
spot.
We sell our restaurant to Applebee's. It won't happen.
Do you know how much college costs these days, by the way?
Yeah. I'm starting to look into it, actually.
She's not going to college. She's going straight to the
family
smoker
business.
Room.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Would you let her go into the family business?
If she wants to, but I mean, I would never ask her.
Right.
I would never try to like guide her in that direction. She can do whatever the heck she wants to do, as long as she's happy.
All right, before we let you go trim some meat, we're going to do our lightning round questions.
Ooh.
You know, either or. We got a bunch. I'll go with the first one, Nolton. We're going to tag team.
Yep.
Shinerbach or Lone Star?
Lone Star, for sure.
Can or bottle?
Oh, can.
Yeah. Okay.
Tall boy.
Tall boy.
Yeah.
Good answer.
Are you good at the riddles under the caps?
Oh, boy. It depends on how many Lone Stars I've had.
All right. Veracruz or Taco Deli?
Ooh, Veracruz. But I love Taco Deli. See, those are two different things. Yeah, it depends on how much time you've got to wait.
Okay. Veracruz takes a little longer.
Takes a little longer.
What's your order at each place?
Probably just carne asada. But with Taco Deli, it depends on what time you get there, because they don't serve lunch tacos. And I'm not a big fan of, like, eggy things.
Oh, you're not a fan of egg?
I don't like egg in my tacos.
Interesting.
I've only been to Veracruz for breakfast tacos, I think, right?
Well, we've had migas tacos and fish tacos. They do a good fish taco.
Yeah.
I've never had meaty ones.
But their salsas are, man, their salsas are so good at Veracruz.
Yeah, those are delicious.
Ugh.
Bourdain or Barack?
Both
who have been to the restaurant. To what? Just preference or
I don't know.
To hang out to have a beer with?
I don't know. Tell me. You're in the driver's seat.
Jeez.
Who is a better orderer / eater?
Oh, Bourdain. Yeah. Definitely.
I bet Barack wanted his lean, not too much. He's a pretty fit
guy. Actually ordered just whatever. He's like, what do you have? What that looks good. I don't know. I think I'd probably rather hang out with Bourdain.
Yeah. I don't know.
But they're both pretty. I mean, I've actually hung out with both of them. Is the weird thing.
They're both incredibly like smart and like have a knowledge of so many things beyond their immediate scope of.
You know, their life. I'm gonna go with Barack because there's a lesser chance of me ever hanging out with that person again.
How about this? How about dinner with Barack, but then going out drinking afterwards with Bourdain?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Good night.
Potato salad or coleslaw?
Ooh. It would depend on this. See, but man, I've got lame-o answers for you guys. I'm real sorry. So if it was brisket, then it would be potato salad. If it was pork, then that pork definitely needs some coleslaw on top of it.
Yeah, preach. Misfits or Minor Threat?
Ooh, man, that's a tough one. I'm going to go with Minor Threat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know my background on this stuff.
I know you like the punk rock.
It's true.
All right, going to put you on the spot with this one. Houston or Dallas?
Houston for sure. No question about it.
Not a fan of Dallas?
You know, it's got its little pockets that are fun, but it's not quite my scene.
Okay.
Vans or Doc Martens?
Vans.
Were you a skater back in the day?
Yeah. And I also wore a lot of Dr. Martens, but I don't know.
Doctor.
I like some lightweight footwear. They're more non-slip, too.
Most important question, butter or olive oil?
Jeez, butter.
But. All right. Aaron Franklin, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much.
Heck yeah.
Thanks, man.
This podcast has been brought to you by Carrie Polis, Emma Wertzman, and Lily Sherman, with editing by Mitra Kaboli. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Gradys. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Plus, we're now offering online cooking classes with Sir La Table that feature our recipes. Sign up at bonappetit.com/cookingclasses and learn how to make everything from pork chops to molten chocolate cake. Thanks for listening.